The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Fordham, and joining me this week is Luke Waddell and Craig Tucker. How are you doing this week, guys?
Very well, Josh. Cheers, thank you.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's a bit of a bad week for Kent teams, really. I don't think any of us saw our teams win over the weekend, so not the best of football to watch over the weekend. But since we are last on air for the podcast, we've had our first managerial casualty in Jay Saunders leaving Maidstone United. Craig, was it a bit of a strange sight to see Jay not in the dugout of Maidstone for the first time in quite a number of years?
Yeah, very strange. Over seven years in charge, and did a brilliant job. Been a lot of love for him since the news came out, of course. And yeah, it was odd. But you know, Steve Watt came back to the club in the summer. He was well known, obviously, to supporters anyway from his time as a player there. And so from that side of it, it sort of wasn't quite so bad because it was a familiar face there still. But yes, very strange and yeah, bizarre week. I don't think anyone saw it coming. Jay going, he always sort of seemed to have one of the safest jobs in football. The owners have always praised him. They've got an awful lot of respect for him. They've always said good things about him. Even in, you know, in April at the end of last season, Terry Casey, one of the owners, had sort of said top draw manager. No, there's no one out there that comes close to him that he'd seen. He's here for the duration. They had a chance, you'd imagine, during that 17 game winless run last year. If you thought if anything's going to happen, it may have been then, and it didn't happen. So you sort of think, yeah, you know, must be sort of safe and sort of, you know, given the chance to have another go at it this season. But yeah, seven games in, it surprised everybody. We'll sort of see where Jay ends up next. I think the Macclesfield thing that he had in the summer, the opportunity to go there, they made him a very good offer to move up to Cheshire, take on that challenge. And you know, you look back, I sort of felt at the time I wish he'd taken it. For him, I thought it would have been a really good opportunity, but there was only one, I felt only one legitimate reason to turn it down, and it was family, and that is why he didn't go. So you know, you can only say fair play to the man, you know, to put his family first. But had he gone up there and done a good job, he could have had all sorts of opportunities from there, and maybe job offers back down south. I think the problem was as well, I think the vast majority of fans were hugely supporters of Jay still, but I always sort of felt that after last season, if there was a bad run, it wouldn't take long for some people to start getting on his back again. And that was another reason I was sort of thinking to myself, I wish he had taken that big chance at Macclesfield. But I admire him for staying, and say for putting his family first. That's a big thing, you know. Football takes people all over the country, but you know, Jay made that decision, and yeah, you know, fair play to him. It's just such a shame that it hasn't worked out this season.
Yeah, I think you can tell just by the sort of the outpouring of well wishes and nice words that people have had to say for Jay, that just how well respected and well liked he was at the club, and the things that he's achieved while as Maidstone manager. I know he wanted to get the club in the Football League, and he's not been able to quite get that, but to get the club to where they are now, he's going to go down in the club's history as such an important figure there. Like you said, it does seem a bit of a surprise, it being so early in the season after seven games. And you look at the league table, they've not had the best of starts, but by no means the worst start teams have had in the league. So yeah, perhaps a little bit early, do you think?
Yeah, I think you look at it and it could have been very different. They'd lost eight points from winning positions, so it could have been a lot further up the table. I think the club had said themselves it was, you know, it potentially could take time. It was a young side this season that Jay had put together. That was the way that they decided to go. And I think, yeah, you know, speaking to the club in the summer, they said, you know, people do need to be patient. It could take 10, 15, even 20 games for the players to get what Jay wants. And as it turned out, you know, he got seven games. But, you know, the owners have always done what they consider to be best for the club. You have to say that. They've done, you know, Jay's done a brilliant job as a manager, but they've also done a brilliant job building the stadium, bringing the club home. They've acted in what they consider to be the best interest of the club. They, from, you know, chatting to Terry last week, they were genuinely concerned about a relegation struggle and they desperately didn't want that again. There's a lot of comments about the budget and perhaps, you know, the backroom staff wasn't the biggest that Jay was working with, and there are bits and pieces that Jay could have done with to sort of help him out more. But they argue that the budget did go up this year. It went up 15%. And from the owner's point of view, they believe the budget to be around a mid-table budget in the National League. Of course, no one knows that for certain. No one knows exactly what people are paying. But, of course, if Maidstone put their budget up, you'd imagine probably most clubs did. So if everybody's doing it, but it is a difficult league. There's an awful lot of money flying around in that division. But, yeah, I'd say decisions have been made and, you know, we'll sort of see what happens.
Yeah, and I think if you drew up a list at the start of the season of managers or potential first casualties as a manager, I think he would have been fairly near the bottom of that list. But we'll see how Maidstone get on without him and who potentially he may be replaced by. We'll talk about their result of the weekend a little later on. But let's first talk about how Gillingham got on at the weekend. A defeat up at Barnsley. Luke, how did Gills play?
They played all right for the last half hour. For the first 60 minutes, though, Barnsley were well in charge. Could have scored a couple more, really. First half, they were completely dominant. Good team, Barnsley were. Just didn't happen for Gillingham. They were well up against it. But once they got the goal back, Josh Parker, they really came into it. And in the end, they kind of showed what could have happened if they'd have sort of put the pressure on right from the start. Because Barnsley's defence didn't look too clever when they were really up against it. It's just a shame that they started the game so sort of slowly, really, and on the back foot.
Yeah, 2-0 down in the first half. Was it a reflection on how poorly they played in the first half, do you think?
Yeah, I think the 2-0 was about right, I think. Kiefer Moore got both the first... you say it's a decent finish. He took it from about 20 yards, but the keeper, it went in the keeper's near post. The manager said afterwards it was the keeper's fault. And I think the keeper probably held his hands up as well, apparently, in the dressing room, and said it was. He should have got it. Second one was a fairly soft penalty. Fellow went down under minimal contact, if any. So the goals that they conceded were quite, you wouldn't expect them to usually concede sort of goals like that. But on reflection of play, and didn't really deserve to be anything other than 2-0 down. But the way they ended the game, they certainly came into it and almost snatched them at the end.
Yeah, and Tommy's had a disallowed goal. Sort of looked on the replays. It was given offside in the end,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Going in there, wasn't it, I think? I think Allen had the shot, which was going in. I'm not sure Eves knew who was around him. Put his foot on the end of it, on the goal line virtually, and he was in an offside position. So the goal was ruled out, unfortunately, because that one would have stood if Eves hadn't have touched it.
Yeah, small margins like that proved quite a big,
that's it,
big difference in the end.
All the play that Barnsley had and all the chances, possession, Gillingham could have easily, you know, got something out of the game if they hadn't have just, you know, if they hadn't conceded the soft goals that they did, and they had a bit of more luck the other end.
Yeah, and it's just one point from the last four games now for Gills. They had such a good start to the season, winning their first couple of games, talking about how potentially this could be a sort of a decent season for Gills, and they were looking quite good. What's been the difference then? Is it just perhaps a little bit of bad luck? Things haven't been going their way?
Yeah, there's no panic yet. You can see in every game that they've played well in certain stages, so I don't think there's any concern. They certainly don't look like they're going to struggle. We've just been unfortunate. They've played all three teams that came down from the Championship. They've played Sunderland, they lost 4-1. Scoreline was quite harsh because they did actually do all right in that game. They beat Burn. Just mentioned the Barnsley game, the Barnsley defeat. So they have played some half-decent teams there, and September, on paper, is looking a bit more advantageous. Maybe they should get a few more points. I think they've got Wimbledon coming up on Saturday. You'd expect them at home to take 3 points at Wimbledon. I think maybe at the end of September you could probably gauge a bit more how their season's going to go, because August was pretty tough.
Yeah, they've played, yeah, like you said, some of the teams that came down last year. Sunderland, they're going to be right up there this year as well. But before that game against Wimbledon on Saturday, we've got the return of the Czech Trade Trophy. Portsmouth on Tuesday. That game's away from home, is that right?
Yes, their group stage, there's their only away game. I think they've got Tottenham's under-21s and Crawley as the other games. And Portsmouth are doing really well in the league, but with the Checker trade, I imagine both teams will, both managers will change it around. So I think it'll be very much different selections from their league teams. And just a chance for others to show what they can do, really.
Yeah, what are your opinions, guys, on the Checker Trade Trophy? I mean, it's used to be just a knockout competition, a chance to get to Wembley, but now since they've changed it, playing under 23 teams from Premier League clubs and making it at a group stage, it's a lot more matches now. Teams that have to play if they do want to get to Wembley. It's been criticised quite heavily by clubs all around the country. What are your guys' thoughts on this competition?
Well, there's more matches. There's more money in it, though. I know a lot of fans don't like it. I think went to West Brom and there was about 9 away fans there, I think, a year or so ago. It's not bringing in the academy side from the Premier League, and the Championship hasn't gone down too well. But to be honest, it was a competition that was dying, really. There wasn't a lot of mileage left in the competition, so they had to do something. And the only way they could get extra money and get extra interest in it was by bringing in some top flight teams who will then the Premier League agreed to put some extra funding into the competition, which makes it better for the lower league teams. But the competition was going nowhere, so they had to do something. But unfortunately, it's like cup competitions overall. Top flight teams, League Cup, FA Cup, they're putting weakened teams in it, so there's not all cup competitions at the minute. Are going through a sort of strange phase, really. It's the lower teams are obviously want to do well in it, but the top teams don't seem interested, to be honest.
Saw a crazy game there last year when you were off. Look, the Reading game, 7-5.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a bonkers game of football. And I don't know if you get a few of those in that competition or. But
I guess mixing teams up, you probably do, because you get inexperienced players. And a lot of these academy teams are a bit of an eye opener for them as well. Not. A lot of them, you might have expected them to do well, but they didn't, did they? I mean, I think Chelsea got the furthest, did they, to the semi-final, I think, last year. I think it was Chelsea. Mm.
Is it one where the clubs would want to bin it off if they could, you think?
Probably. yeah. I imagine so.
Well, I think I read something last year that some clubs actually, they don't make any money from it because attendances are so poor. They're getting sort of, even some of the big clubs, getting only a few thousand through the gate.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln obviously won it last year and they did get big attendances. But they're riding on the crest of a wave, and you know, any home game they get at the minute, they're selling out and stuff. So it's a bit different for them, and they won the final. I think they did make a lot of money, but I think previous winners haven't really made a great deal of money, even by winning it, maybe like $500,000 or something like that, which isn't a massive amount in terms of football. I don't know. So they had to do something to the competition. So by inviting the Premier League academies or whatever into it, at least it's, made it a bit more appealing for some people. But I don't think crowds have really changed at the minute. It'll be interesting to see how many people turn up at Priestfield when Tottenham bring their under-21s, because that'll be quite interesting to see whether people do still boycott it or whether it does generate a bit of extra interest.
You can get some fairly decent players playing for those under-23 sides. If players need match fitness for Spurs, you never know who might turn up. I mean,
they've got big squads, haven't they? For them, it's quite good to have some competitive football. But it's not as competitive as a league game either, is it?
No, absolutely not. And like we said, Saturday, game against Wimbledon. They've not started the season very well. 5 points from their opening games. Potentially a chance for Gilles to get 3 points on the board and get things back on track.
Should be. Yeah, you'd expect them to get 3 points at home, but those games at home when you expect 3 points doesn't always work out like that. Games against Wimbledon at the minute are quite interesting because the fact that there's players, former players of Gillingham playing for Wimbledon and vice versa. You've obviously got Barry Fuller, came back into the team for Gillingham on Saturday, and he was their captain at Wimbledon, played an awful lot of games for them, captained them in the playoff final and won it. And then in the Wimbledon team you got Scott Wagstaff now, and Deji Oshalaja captain them, centre back. So it'll be quite interesting. There'll be quite a few little battles out there on the field that'll catch the eye. I think Wagstaff and Oshalaja have both played in all of their games. They should be starters at Priestfield on Saturday. And I imagine Fuller, will he keep the right back position? I don't know. He did do a lot wrong on Saturday, so he might stay in the team to face his former side. So, yeah, quite an intriguing clash, that one.
You've got Joe Piggott, of course, as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he did well, didn't he, for Maidstone?
Mm. Doing well at Wimbledon. He seems to have sort of had a good start to the season as well. Scored against West Ham last week as well. So,
yeah,
doing
Pinnock as well. The former Dover.
Yeah, he did well at Dover last season. They're really missing him this season. So, yeah, seem to be picking up a few good players from the non-league and from clubs around Kent as well.
So. Wimbledon are certainly an interesting team to keep an eye on, really, with the Kent connections.
Definitely. And one thing I forgot to mention earlier was we can hear a little bit from Steve Lovell after that game against Barnsley at the weekend.
A team like Barnsley, you can't give them two goals, can't give anybody two goals and expect to come back, especially against a quality side like they've got. So I'm just disappointed. We knew, you know, they would create us problems, and they did, but we give them two goals. You can't, the first goal, I blame Thomas Holy. It's gone in near post. It's gone in. Goalkeeper's got to save that. All right, it's a game where you say, what a great strike. Goalkeeper's got to save it. I don't care what you say. Got to save it. And the second one's a penalty. From a corner, which we knew they would do, a short one. Elliot List doesn't do his job. It's in the back of the net. It's a penalty. So you can't give teams a lift. Then after that, we changed it up a bit and a few choice words at half-time. And to be fair, they came out second half and you know, done us proud. You know, they fought for everything. We had a number of opportunities. Perhaps we could have got something, you know, at the end of the game, because, you know, Barnsley were giving us respect at the end. They were taking their time, and because they knew they were in for a bit of a fight second half. Even when we won the ball, we had too many touches on it. And against anybody, if you have too many touches on it, someone's going to close you down. If you pass one, two touch football and pass around like they did, you're not going to get near them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we didn't. We didn't get near them first half. Our midfield players were too deep, marking space rather than players. So our midfield players are protecting our centre-halves when they don't need protecting. Let our centre-halves deal with their centre-forwards. The midfield players do their job and worry about their midfielders. And when we came to terms with that second half, we nicked the ball off and we went at them. So, you know, it's things that they've got to learn. They're young boys. It's a team that we've stuck together, you know, brought together in the summer. So it'll take a bit of time, but these are the things that have got to be done. But as I say, at the end of the day, I'll take a positive out of it as the way that they came back second half, and we could have got something out of the game.
So, Luke, what was Steve Lovell's reaction after the game? Was he sort of happy, well, disappointed with the result, but happy with the overall performance?
Not happy for the first half at all. He said there's quite a heated debate in the change room. I think he said he owes Barnsley for a new bin or something. He destroyed the bin, I think, in the half-time debate. Not happy with some of the individual errors that led to the goals, obviously. I think he made a comment saying that the midfielders were helping out the defenders too much. They should have been doing their own job. There was gaps in midfield that Barnsley exploited. There was a few things that he looked to get right, and eventually it did, sort of towards the end of the game when they really sort of had a bit of a go, really. Before, I don't know whether they were, a bit too complimentary about him, really, just letting them play the football, which, you know, take the game to them like they did in the last half hour, and they started to get results, and yeah, they could have almost snapped something.
Yeah,
but Steve, he was pretty angry. But I think the way they ended the game, you know, reassured him that, yeah, they can do it.
Yeah, no, it's that's good to see that they improved in the second half there. Yeah, like I said, they've got Portsmouth on Tuesday in the Cheikh-Tray Trophy, and then Wimbledon on Saturday. Let's move on to some National League games now. Craig, you went to Gateshead at the weekend. Long trip up there. Sadly, didn't come away with anything. Down to a last-minute penalty. Must be gutting to lose the game. With a last-minute goal.
Yeah, really close to getting a point from that one. The Gateshead had a penalty saved in the first half. Had a sort of fair few chances. Lee Walker made quite a few decent saves in that one. It looks like nil-nil was probably on the cards, but yeah, the late penalty, and it's a shame because nil-nil, you'd have sort of said, you know, good point at a difficult place, sort of build on that, go from there. But Steve Watt after the game, he felt that the players, there are a few players there feeling sorry for themselves after Jay leaving the club. I think he was sort of reasonably pleased with the defending. In fact, he defended the box well, but beyond that, he didn't see a lot that he was sort of too chuffed with. But as I say, you come away from there with a point and you think, that's decent, good away point. But as you said, in one moment you lose and you're sort of looking at the negative sides of it again, conceding another bad goal. They had a really good chance. They didn't really do a lot going forward. It was mainly sort of defending. But there was a moment sort of midway through the second half, there was a 3-on-1 break. And it looked for all the world as if they should have scored, really. And as it turned out, they didn't even get a shot off. The pass went astray. And you look at that as odd moment, you get a chance to go and do something and then sort of that happens and things like that. He was sort of very frustrated with it at the end. But again, they'd had one session, well, two, I suppose, really, because they stopped up at Doncaster on the way up to Gateshead on Friday. They had the Thursday session as well to look at things. Steve had brought in Craig Brewster, his old manager at Inverness, as his number two. He's hugely experienced. They went through some things, but it's difficult when you've got minimal time to sort of get your points across. He said they tried to keep it fairly simple. He did go 4-4-2, tried to keep it, say, simple, and made a sort of two or three changes in the hope of getting something there. But it didn't quite happen.
Yeah, and there were two red cards in between that penalty incident and when the penalty was taken as well. But helpfully, on the Gateshead highlights, they'd not shown any of that at all. What actually happened there that saw two players, one from each team, sent off?
It doesn't really seem like anybody saw it. There was a lady in the press box at Gateshead who was convinced she saw Turgot kick out at the Gateshead player O'Donnell. But she was the only one in the press box that saw it. I don't think either manager saw it. Certainly Steve Watt didn't, because he was preparing a substitution, thinking that the penalty would probably be scored, or in the event of it being scored, he wanted to bring another forward on. So he was sorting out a substitution at the time, so he missed it. But again, he made the point afterwards, he would try to find out what happened. But obviously he said if it was one where Blair did deserve to go, he'd be really disappointed with that, given that in a situation the club's in, you need everyone available. But without knowing, you can't really sort of criticise them if he's had a chat with Blair yet to find out exactly what he did do or his side of it. But it was a bit of a mystery, really. I don't think anyone sort of seemed to know beyond the lady in the press box.
No, you can't trust just one person. And even if the highlights didn't show it, doesn't seem like they got it on camera. So yeah, bit of an odd one. What was Steve Watt's reaction after the game? What did he say? Must have been disappointed to lose the game right at the end there.
Yeah, I think it was the fact that that he felt that a few people feeling sorry for themselves, which, as you said, it's no good in football. You can't have that. He was as gutted as anyone about Jay going. Jay signed him in the first place. He made him captain. He brought him back as his assistant manager. So they, really good relationship. And he obviously didn't want Jay to go. He didn't expect it to happen. But obviously he's been around football a long time. And as he said, football does move on, and you have to move on. Managers come and go. Players come and go. In reality, that is how it is. And you have to get on with it. And I suspect he did feel that some were feeling sorry for themselves instead of getting on with the job.
And we can listen to a little bit of reaction from Steve Watt from that game at the weekend.
Disappointed that we've given another goal away through mistakes. The set of players are now. We have to stop finding ways to lose games of football. We weren't great today by any stretch of means. We try to strip things back for the players and make it a bit simpler without changing too much, because we don't have a great deal of time to work on it. But I just felt today that there's maybe a few players feeling a bit sorry for themselves and in terms of what's going on this week, because I saw a few performances today I haven't necessarily seen so far this season. So I don't know if what's going on this week has been a factor to that. The players say it isn't, but I would question that, because I think there's players in there that are a lot better than what they showed today. I'm just obviously disappointed in the manner the second one was conceded, because I thought the game was done. It was going to be a nil-nil game, if I'm being honest. I mean, barring corners and in shots from distance, I can't really remember this cutting us open, if you like, without playing well. So you're thinking 85 minutes, you're thinking, you know what, it's going to be a good point, good building block for the week that's coming up. And then we go and make another error, which we keep making, it seems, is costing us goals.
So the next two games for Maidstone, they come quite quickly, as most of the games have in the National League this season. We've played, 8 games already, and it's only the start of September. But they've got Sutton at home on Tuesday, and followed by Salford away on Saturday. Sutton sort of had a bit of a mixed start to the season, as have Salford. They're sort of mid-table teams at the moment. But home advantage for Maidstone, should be a good turnout there, and potentially, I'm guessing, 3 points on the cards, do you think, for Maidstone?
Yeah, difficult game. Sutton have only lost once. I've only won 3, but obviously only lost once. They're difficult side to beat. Be interesting to see what the crowd is, whether there is a reaction to Jay going, whether the crowd's down, or whether there are, not protests, but whether the sort of fans make their feelings known. I think a few people were wondering whether the famous Jay flag might make a reappearance in the North Stand. But, you know, the club, you know, Steve was saying, so just appeal to everyone to get behind the team and give them the backing that they need, because, as he says, you know, you need everybody on side at a time like this. They're training today, so they'll have another session to get some ideas across and try to come up with a way to beat Sutton. Obviously, Blair Turgot will be missing. We think it's a 3-game ban. He's been virtually the only one scoring. He's got 5 goals, yeah. So it's sort of trying to replace his goals. It won't be easy, but sort of see what you can come up with.
Yeah, they're going to appeal that red card by the fact that no one saw it.
I don't think they came without footage. I think it's one, sort of a bit stuck on that one, really. Nobody sort of managed to get it. Yeah. I think because of the business around the penalty at the time, I think the cameras were sort of pointing at the sort of penalty, what was going on there. So it's one, you know, they can't do anything. Even picture evidence is no good. I think they sort of accept that either, and there probably aren't any pictures anyway. So, no, they're stuck with that one, unfortunately.
Yes, and then Salford on Saturday. They came into the league one of the favourites to go up there, but they've sort of found it a little bit tough, probably a little bit tougher than perhaps some of their fans were expecting it to be. But that's going to be a tough place to go, but also a new ground to tick off for some of the fans. Are you looking forward to going up there on Saturday?
Yeah, it'd be good to see what that's all about. They obviously made a lot of news, a lot of coverage over the time since the United lads have gone in there. Yeah, they've had a mixed start. They've seemed apparently spending an awful lot of money to try to go straight through into the league. And they're probably not great games for a caretaker manager, the 3 games to sort of, you know, try to get results to nail a job, really. Either Gateshead away, difficult, Sutton, difficult, and the same for Saturday. Yeah. But again, it's going to be going there and try and defend properly, keep it tight, I guess, and see what they can do going the other way.
Yeah, and you sort of mentioned the 3 games that Steve Watt have as caretaker manager, tough games. But looking at the odds for the next manager, he's current favourite at the moment. But is there any names on that list that perhaps surprised you? One that did stand out for me is Sol Campbell, 3rd favourite to be next Maidstone boss.
Yeah, I don't know where they get these odds from. They're sort of plucking names out from everywhere. There was, I can't see that. Can't see that one happening. See, Big Joe Kinnear was on there as well. That would be pretty entertaining, the opening press conference, if he came in, especially if Niall Hickman and Simon Bird make an appearance. Old Kinnear's mates from his Newcastle days that he launched. I think they just sort of pluck these names out, don't they, for a bit of fun, put the odds together. Steve Watt is the favourite at the minute, and be interesting to see what he does. He's making a case himself. He obviously knows the club very well. He's popular with the supporters. Knows the game. People would probably argue that he's not got the experience as a manager at that level. He's only had the year at Margate in the Ryman Prem, but then again, he's got Craig Brewster alongside him, who has an awful lot of experience. So maybe it could be the, you know, younger guy, older, experienced head that could work. But I think it depends on obviously who applies, or whether the club have got a target in mind that hasn't applied. I think there's been an awful lot of interest. I think over 50 applicants. So there's big interest. And there was always going to be big interest. It's an attractive job. I don't think anybody saw it obviously coming up anytime soon, but it has, and then people are quick to sort of throw their hat into the ring.
Yeah, and Luke, one of the names on that list is Aidy Pennock, former Gills player and manager. Do you think that's a job that he would go for? I mean, he's part of a company with Barrow, sort of towards the end of last season, I think it was. Do you think that's a job that he would be looking at and potentially going for?
Yeah, definitely. Why not? Yeah, I think any manager that's out of job at the minute will jump at something like Maidstone. It's a well-run club, isn't it? It's a club that's got potential to go places, and there's definitely potential for someone like him to go for it. Whether that he's the kind of manager that Maidstone wanted, maybe a different kettle of fish. But I think if you're a manager and you haven't got a job, then yeah, why not go for it?
Yeah, one position that perhaps he has also been linked to a few rumours is Dover. They've started the season quite poorly. Chris Kinnear's position perhaps a little bit dubious at the moment. They've lost their last four games, find themselves in the relegation zone, taken 4 points from their opening eight games, and they look like a side at the moment who don't really know what they're doing. They can't seem to stop conceding goals, and they can't seem to find goals at the other end as well. They lost 2-1 at home to Barnet at the weekend, conceded inside the first 4 minutes, I think it was. Really poor start from them. They've conceded 19 goals now in their opening eight games of the season. Worst defensive record in the National League. A bit surprising from Chris Kinnear's sides. They normally sort of set out quite solid at the back, keep things tight, but it seems to have all fallen apart this season. Signings that he's made don't seem to have really worked, don't seem to have replaced the quality they had last year. I think one player they're really missing is Giancarlo Gallifuco and Manny Parry, both very solid last year. Really missing those players there. Yeah, 2-0 down against Barnet inside the first half. Did get a goal back in the second through Mitch Brundle, but couldn't really create that many chances to get back in the game. It's perhaps under a little bit of pressure there. Got another couple of tough games coming up as well. Ebbsfleet at home on Tuesday and then Chesterfield on Saturday. So perhaps his position will be is under a bit of pressure at the moment, in the bottom four of the National League. It's a position that he hasn't really found himself in as Dover manager in the last 5 years. He's going to be a tricky time for Chris Kinnear. I mean, what do you guys think? Jay Saunders left Maidstone after seven games and they'd picked up more points than Dover. Do you think that his position perhaps is under a bit of threat at the moment?
Yeah, it seems to be some rumours flying around. It's difficult. Again, you think of Jay and you think of people refer back to the past, all the success. I suppose this is a similar story with Chris Kinnear, really. He's had an awful lot of success and you think, you know, does that buy him more time because of his record? This is a very strong record. I've seen quite a lot of his interviews and he certainly says publicly that he doesn't feel they're far away. There's not a lot wrong. He's just cutting out those errors. So if that is really all it is, then, you know, he needs to have a conversation with the chairman or whatever and sort of put that point across, and hopefully for him buying more time if they are thinking that something's close. It is difficult because you do think of Chris's record and you just think successful manager. Again, been good ever since he got him back into the conference.
They've not finished outside the top eight since he's got them in the International League, which is a fantastic record last four seasons. It's probably hard to beat
very good.
For
and
managers.
And if he were to go, he'd probably find some people even saying, well, get him in at Maidstone. He could probably, you know, walk into another job. I suppose the problem there would be the training, because obviously the teaching job would mean the training is a problem because Mason train mornings, but some people might sort of ridicule that because, you know, he's had a bit to say about 3G and perhaps certain fans don't, you know, take to him, but he's a good manager and maybe a new challenge. We'd perhaps see him sort of touted around for that job as well, but yeah, we'll see there. It's certainly a tough time. He did see the interview at the weekend. He did seem a bit down. See, some of the supporters are saying he's saying the same things, but I suppose really in public, what else can he say? He can't really hammer people, can he? Or
he's not going to come out and criticise the players, you know, and start laying. He's
always
not that sort of manager.
No, he's always been very calculated in what he says, and he knows exactly what he's saying, and he's not going to come out and say this and that. Is he might say it privately, but you know, in public he's got to really keep it level, which he's always said, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we can hear a little bit from Chris Kinnear after that defeat to Barnet at the weekend.
It's no good pretending there's not a problem, but I mean, I say most of the game we're the same as everybody else, but it's just those individual mistakes that we're making game after game, and we've got to cut them out, and that's what we've got to work on. But no ranting and raving, it's about learning and making sure that individuals don't do that and all working together. Best happens in football, doesn't it? Sometimes you're on that run and you make a mistake and they whistle one in, so we've just got to... It does change round. I've been doing this long enough to know that, you know, we're not that far away. I mean, they were not a lot better than us, and we say that every game, every game really, we've always been in it. You know, we could have scored and ended up 2-2 and then gone from there, but, you know, that's the way football is. But as I say, not going to hide. We'll be training Monday there and trying to sort that out, and that's the only way you get better. We've been in this situation before, and in the end, got out of it.
So next up for Dover is Ebbsfleet at home on Tuesday, a game that I'm sure Dover fans aren't going to be relishing. Ebbsfleet are in good form this season. They've started the season very well. It's a tough game for Chris Kinnear, and I think perhaps if they lose that one, this Kinnear's position could be under a bit more pressure, losing to your rivals, to your the other local Kent team. It's going to be a difficult one for him, and then also Chesterfield on Saturday, team that came down.
Chesterfield, then they've plummeted a bit, haven't they, recently? Started the season sort of well, and
yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. Perhaps they've just finding the National League a bit tougher than they expected. It happens to quite a lot of teams that come down from League Two.
The expectations there with Chesterfield as well, weren't they? Mark Allen in charge. That'll be an interesting game for both managers on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the league table now. They've only taken 9 points from their opening eight games, won three and lost five. It's not the best of records, but yeah, like you said, they came in the season with great expectations, started off the season reasonably well, and yeah, it's difficult to put your finger on what's really going wrong there.
I wonder if some people do estimate just how good that division is, because there was teams coming into that, like Salford, like you mentioned, thinking, you know, we're going to walk this, we're going to get into the league, and you come up against some really good teams in that division. Really good, and Wrexham are flying high at the minute, aren't they? I don't know how many people sort of thought they'd be doing so well, but they are.
Yeah, there are some strange teams at the top of the table. You look at Harrogate, second at the moment. They've not lost this season. Halifax are up there as well. Solihull Moors, they struggled last season. They're right up there. Hartlepool, they struggled last season. They're in right in the top half of the table, as well as Gateshead. So, yeah, you never know with this league. It's a bit of an old cliche, but it is a very tough league to get out of. Let's talk briefly about Ebbsfleet's defeat at home to Fylde on Saturday. Fylde, very good side in this league. They're flying high near the top of the table. Not lost this season. 16 points from their opening eight games. Always going to be a tough game for Ebbsfleet to get past that one. A bit of a difficult one. One interesting thing I did pick out after that defeat was they've only won one out of their four home games this season, which a bit of an interesting one. You think that Ebbsfleet, they'll be traditionally good at home. For home to you guys, what do you think could be the reason behind that? Do you think they've played tough opposition at home? Could that be play a part in it?
Yeah, they have had difficult fixtures at home. They had a really tough start, didn't they? The first 9 or 10 fixtures were all against, you know, sort of big clubs and difficult clubs. Certainly from reading Steve's report from the weekend and what Darren McMahon had to say, it was the striker at Fylde, Rowe, the two goals. Apparently he was outstanding. I think McMahon said he's the best finisher in the division. They've obviously held on to him. I think he came through the leagues of him, didn't he, Rowe, and probably been offered moves elsewhere. But Fylde have got a lot of money, and they're paying him a lot of money to stay. Obviously, Ebbsfleet, you know, pay well as well. Two teams that I think Steve expects to be up there fighting for the title. but Roe was the difference on the day there, and he's a good player. He can say he can win any game, really, the ability he's got.
Yeah, and when I spoke to Jay LaBelle, Dover's assistant manager, when they lost 4-0 at Fylde, said the same thing. Danny Roe was the difference between the sides. He's probably arguably the best striker in the league, consistently getting goals. Yeah, so that was always going to be a tricky one for Ebbsfleet. But they're still up there near the top of the table, 13 points from their opening 8 games, doing well. Look like potentially, do you think, could be up there at the end of the season? Things started well for them?
Yeah, definitely. I think they've probably got more points because they drew all the games at the start of last season, so they're probably a lot better off a year down the line, stronger squad, settled side. Yeah, they undoubtedly will be right up there. I think, as I say talking to Steve, it's title contenders, and certainly if they're not winning the league, you'd imagine they'll be one of the 6 in the playoffs.
Definitely. And
you mentioned a settled side as well. I mean, that's just exactly what Dover aren't, are they? Unfortunately,
yes, it's having to complete opposite.
Having to rebuild every summer is just a nightmare, isn't it? If they'd perhaps got a few of those players to stick around, form on a couple of year contracts, then they might be doing a bit better off, might they?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's complete opposites. Dover losing players season after season. I think only 6 players sort of returned from last season. Whereas, yeah, FC kept hold of...
Isn't it, having to start again all the time? It's going to go wrong eventually.
Yeah, it's one thing to consider when perhaps they're looking for a new manager, or new managers potentially looking at Dover if Kinnear does eventually go. They'll have to contend with that every season. Managers will look at that and think that's going to be sort of a tough job every season. That's why Chris Kinnear is so good at Dover, because he just finds those sort of gems of a player, and it just seems like he hasn't managed to replace that quality he had last season. You don't know if it might take a bit of time for the players to gel, but yeah, he hasn't been able to find the quality.
Maybe they will give him a bit of extra time, because that's the nature of that job, isn't it?
Yeah, you would like to see him get a bit of extra time. I think sort of 8 or 9 games is a very short time in the National League. We're only in at the start of September. So, yeah, you would like to see him get a bit more time. And, Ebbsfleet face Dover on Tuesday. I'm sure that'll be a game they'll be targeting, getting 3 points, considering the way that Dover started the season. And then they host Gateshead on Saturday. They've started the season well. Craig, you saw them at the weekend. Going to be a tough game for Ebbsfleet.
Yeah, they're not a bad side. Not a bad side at all, but Ebbsfleet at home.
Ebbsfleet are at home.
So I think they're probably stronger at home, Gateshead, than they are on their travels. I think to be honest, it'd probably be a home win, that one.
Yeah.
What's it like at that place, though? There's about 500 fans there, wasn't there? The big athletics.
Yeah, it's strange. It's a marvellous stadium for athletics. It's a huge place, massive stands.
You have a stand for yourself?
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty. You can imagine it at an athletics meeting being packed and being a really good atmosphere. But for football, 5-6-4, the attendance, they were really disappointed with that. They were expecting sort of at least 800. They were expecting more Maidstone fans as well. I think the first year in the conference, I think it was over 200 went up to that one, but obviously at the minute took a difficult time, and let's say a lot of early fixtures in the season, it's difficult to afford all these long trips. So there were sort of 46 went up at the weekend, and they were sort of banking on about 200 again, so they were a bit, that probably affected the gate from their point of view. But it's a strange setup, but atmosphere undoubtedly suffers. But yeah, they seem to be sort of a decent side there, but I'm not so sure away, but yeah, so I'd expect Ebbsfleet to do a job on them on Saturday.
Yeah, and we can listen to a bit of reaction from Daryl McMahon after that defeat at home to Fylde at the weekend.
They've had 3 shots on target and scored 3 goals. We've had another load of chances and only scored 1. Danny Rowe, he's the best goal scorer in the division, isn't he? We've been beaten by him today. It's two fantastic goals. We've switched off from both goals and probably a counter attack at the end, when that's probably harsh, the 3 when we were on the goal to try and get another one. But disappointing in the end. In the actual game, we've defended really well as a team. They've not had another shot. So they have 3 shots on target, and Nash has not made a save, and lose 3-1 at home is disappointing. But there we go. We've got to keep creating a chance, and got to keep believing. I thought there was a spell at 2-0 for probably 10 minutes where we looked like we didn't believe, to be honest, until we scored, and then we had a bit of life in us again, and I thought we had couple of bits in and around their box then, and we look bright and we look dangerous then. But listen, it's one of them. It's a difficult one to take right now, but we're going for Tuesday night.
Let's turn our attention now to a bit of National League South action. Dartford, they've been struggling of late. They lost 2-0 at St Albans at the weekend. Really seem to be struggling now in National League South. It's a bit of a difficult one to know sort of what's really been happening at Dartford. What do you think, guys? What's been happening there? I know they've had a couple of injury problems, but is that completely the they can put that down to? Do you think?
Difficult for new managers, isn't it? It's got to take time. Obviously, joint managers as well. We spoke about that the other week, didn't we? The joint managers, particularly, probably is a relationship that takes more time. You've gone in there, you've been sort of put, obviously know each other well and are friends, but they've been put together as joint managers. They've probably got slightly different ideas, and it's getting the balancing act of how they want to do things. And and Tony Berman obviously there for such a long time, to then, it's a huge change, isn't it, for Berman to go and to get new managers in. It's hard to know what the expectations were this season. We're really sure what people were expecting. People sort of talking about playoffs, but also wary of it being a tougher division this year with Billericay and Torquay and Woking being there as well. But it is very early. If they get a couple of back-to-back wins, it all changes again, doesn't it? And it's sort of loads of time. It's ridiculously early, isn't it, really, to be sort of talking about problems.
Yeah, a lot of changes at that club, isn't it? So they'll need time to bed it all in, really, I think. Yeah, give them a fair while. Might take a whole season just to settle in, and then might have to just face up to the fact that it's going to take that long to get it right and then go again next season.
Yeah, particularly after last season, the way they missed out on promotion, the way that they did. It's always going to be tough for those new managers coming in. Like you said, expectations probably would have been to at least get the playoffs, if not to win the league. It's a tough one for them. And their fixture schedule doesn't get any easier. They are at home to Eastbourne Borough at the weekend. They've started the season very well. It's a tough start for them, but I'm sure they will turn it around there. They've two sort of experienced managers, I'm sure they will turn things around there. So one last thing before we finish this week is to look at the team of the week now. Craig, in goal this week we had Lee Wargan from Maidstone. Justified his position in there, even though they lost. Put in a good performance.
Yeah, I think so. He had a string of saves, particularly first half. I nominated him. There was a bit of debate in the office, though, Luke, wasn't there, over that one.
Mention who it was, but someone else on the sports desk thought he shouldn't be in it, and then sort of took me over and said, "Come on, have a look at the highlights. He shouldn't be in it." And all he showed me was Lee Wargan making all these saves. Made a penalty save. He conceded one at the end, but. I think he dropped one, but that was about it. So I came away thinking, should be in it.
Yeah, and he went.
Good choice.
Oh dear. And then a defensive line of Rob Gilman from Whitstable Town, and then Charlie Webster from Hythe Town, and then a defender from Wellington. How do you pronounce his name, Craig?
Anthony Achimpong.
Achimpong. Yeah. He scored a brilliant goal, actually. Left-footed volley,
but he did his job at the back as well. They won 3-2, but talking to Matt, who was at that game, he did really well at the back as well. A lot of decent interventions, and I think Matt put his name forward straight away, and deserves his place.
Definitely. That finish is absolutely brilliant. Looked like a striker's finish there.
Yeah, wrapped the old left foot around it, didn't he?
And, it wasn't bad. Yeah. And then in midfield we have Tunbridge Angels, Adam Ramadan, and then Tommy Lawrence from Tunbridge Wells, Ryan Croucher from Beersted, and then from Sheppey we have Hicham. How do you say his
Akazan?
Akazan.
Yeah. It was his birthday as well that day, I think. Scored a couple for Sheppey. They needed a response after their defeat the other week, so good win against Ballon.
A couple of new names in there as well in midfield. The lad at Beersted, Croucher, got a couple of goals, and young Lawrence at Tunbridge Wells, been hearing good things about him. We're putting forward. He's flying at the minute, and he's been scoring as well. Perhaps one to keep an eye on there in the Kent League.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of Bostic and Skeffel representation this week, probably partly because teams in the National League South didn't do all that well at the weekend. Then up front we have Harry Goodger from Faversham Town, Kane Rowland from Folkestone, and then Connor Coyne from Deal Town. Manager of the week, Scott Porter from Whitstable. They had a brilliant result against Ashford at the weekend. Ashford were flying high at the top of the Bostic South East, and they managed to get a 1-0 win against them. So, yeah, good result for Whitstable Town there to get their first 3 points of the season. So, brilliant. Thanks very much to everyone who's listened to the podcast this week. Don't forget to subscribe on Audioboom and iTunes.